It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Hey, 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 good morning, and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 27th. How are we doing this morning? Whew, just flew back from Pensacola, Florida. Never been there before, but I was playing in the member guest there. Jenny Pate is the member. Very talented player. She and her buddy Katie shot in the low 70s. I shot in the 80s. And the fourth person on our team, Laura, the higher handicapper, played lights out, took advantage of her strokes, and we won. How about that? But hey, Jenny Pate, her father's Jerry Pate, the winner of the 1974 U.S. Amateur, 1976 U.S. Open, 1982 Players Championship, in addition to a ton of other pro wins. But, wow, Jerry taught Jenny how to play. And how would you like to have a U.S. Open champ teach you the game? Just really had a good time. She can play. Just great to watch these women hit the ball. And the awards are really clever. It's a pelican, kind of like this metal pelican on a stand. It's kind of cool. It's kind of tough to get it back on the plane, but managed to do it. Anyway, it was really a cool award. So coming off that, and we have a show for you this morning. The first major championship on the calendar for the women, the Chevron Championship at the club at Carlton Woods, the Woodlands in Texas, and it is a crowded leaderboard. There are 14 players within four shots of the lead. Heron Rue and Mayo Saigo, they're tied for the lead at 9-under. Rue carded a 4-under 68 yesterday, the low score of the day. Saigo shot a 69. American Lindy Duncan, she shot a bogey-free 70 yesterday. She's 1 behind at 8-under. So Duncan will join Rue and Saigo in the final threesome, and they get going at about 12:36 Eastern time this afternoon. American Sarah Schmalzel is 7-under. She's 2 shots back. That's where Jan Lua is. And Lexi Thompson is right in the mix. Lexi Thompson, she's 2-under 70 yesterday. Actually started with a bogey-bogey start. 6 birdies. She had then another 2 bogeys. She is 6-under overall for the championship. So Lexi right in there, 3 shots back. And you may remember last May, Lexi Thompson announced her retirement from full-time professional golf. But she's playing in select events this year. And her new schedule is obviously working. She shot a 5-under 67 on Friday. Just cruised up the leaderboard. And wow, yeah, she said her semi-retired life means she can be away from the game without guilt and take more vacations, which is a really cool mindset, I would say. And she was really the face of American women's golf for such a long time. And I mean, there is a lot of pressure and expectation on her. At the age of 12, back in 2007, she was the youngest golfer to qualify to play in the U.S. Women's Open back then. Then she turned pro at 15. She wins her first tournament at 16. Wins the only major that she has won so far. Back in 2014, actually, the Kraft Nabisco Championship at the age of 19. So right now she's 30 years old. And I would think, you know, you can get burned out from all the travel and all the stress of that schedule. And so this new schedule is probably just what the doctor ordered. Anyway, you can watch the Chevron Championship on Peacock from 2 to 3 this afternoon and on NBC from 3 to 6. And Grant Boone, the play-by-play commentator, host of LPGA tournaments on the Golf Channel, he's going to join us after the 7:40 update to bring us up to date on all things LPGA. The PGA Tour is in New Orleans, the Zurich Classic. It's that two-man team format. First and third rounds, they have four ball, which is kind of best ball, the twosome. And then alternate shot in the second and today's final round. So a lot on this line for these guys. Each player on the winning team will receive 400 FedEx Cup points, $1.3 million, a two-year exemption on the PGA Tour through 2027, and entry into the three remaining signature events. Not bad for a team event, I would say. And, of course, all eyes are on the team of Rory McIlroy and his buddy, fellow Irishman Shane Lowry. They're the defending champions. And this is Rory's first tournament back since winning the Masters on April 13th, capturing the career Grand Slam. And he flew to Ireland after that to celebrate with his mom and dad and all his friends there. And now he's in New Orleans. And they are 22 under, Rory and Shane, five shots behind the team of Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin. And Rory and Shane carded two eagles yesterday. They shot a 61 in the best ball format. They have four total eagles through three rounds, which is the most eagles by any team this week. Now, if Rory can get a win today, he'll join Gene Sarazen as the only players to win in their first start after completing the career Grand Slam. So, hey, there's always history to make, for sure. And Andrew Novak and Ben Griffin, they're at 27 under. They lead by three. You've heard Novak's name a lot this season. He has three top three finishes so far this season and just lost to Justin Thomas on that first playoff hole last week at the RBC Heritage. So he's playing lights out. Let's see, in other news, the European Ryder Cup team announced this week that Jose Maria Althabel was named a vice-captain for Team Europe for the 2025 Ryder Cup at Bethpage. He will rejoin Thomas Bjorn and Eduardo Molinari as European Ryder Cup vice-captains. And he was actually, Althabel, the last captain to lead Team Europe to victory on U.S. soil in 2012, the infamous European comeback in the singles session at Medina. He's 59 years old. You know, he was at Augusta National the whole weekend prior to the start of the Masters. He played in it again. And he was great. I saw him there for the Augusta National Women's AM. He was there to congratulate Carla Bernat Escudero, the Spaniard who won the Augusta National Women's Amateur title. And Althabel was also there on the Sunday of the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals. It was great to see him hanging out and supporting the young players. And this would be his fifth time as a vice captain of a Ryder Cup team. Of course, he played on seven Ryder Cups. And with that incredible partnership with Seve Ballesteros. And he wasn't quite sure if he was going to be a vice captain this year. He said, you know, being in New York is not going to be easy, but the Ryder Cup is very close to my heart. He said, I have wonderful memories about this event. So I said, yes. So see that? New York's already psyching these guys out. It's going to be an incredible Ryder Cup at Bethpage. LIV Golf is in Mexico City. And it looks like Bryson DeChambeau is leading after two rounds. He's the captain of the Crushers team. Now, in the first round, he drove the green on the 18th hole. You ready for this? A 396-yard par 4. He drives the green. That 63 put him one shot in front of John Rahm and Cameron Smith. And after that first round, I read where he averaged 367 yards in his 14 drives. I mean, that's insane. But again, the elevation in Mexico City is 7,900 feet above sea level. So how much fun to watch these guys just bomb the ball. Ed, you can do that, right? You can fly the ball that far off the tee.
Oh, I'm like Happy Gilmore out there.
Moving your feet and swinging like just a crazy person, right? Unbelievable. He is DeChambeau. He's 13 under after two rounds now. He's one shot ahead of Cameron Smith. They both shot 566s yesterday. And DeChambeau is three shots ahead of Joaquim Niemann. And Bubba Watson, I have to look at his score. He's tied for 10th at 5 under because I played with Bubba's wife, Angie, in a practice round in Pensacola this past week. And she really hits the ball. She's a former college basketball player. And she told me that Bubba taught her the game. Again, you get these incredible players teaching you golf. It was a joy to play with Angie. She's a really great person. So that's LIV Golf. They finish up today. The Players Advisory Council, they met at Harbortown in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and I read where they're really seriously discussing changes to the FedEx Cup playoffs, a season-ending event on the PGA Tour. So we're going to see some changes with that coming up. You know, this whole format about these players starting with a shot advantage, the top players, they start so many shots under par before even hitting a ball. I always thought that was a weird format. So they're talking about getting rid of that. They're probably going to get rid of the match play format. And so we'll keep you posted on what they decide on in the coming weeks. All right, this morning we're going to visit with the great Hal Sutton. Hal won 14 PGA Tour events, including the 1983 PGA Championship, the 1983 and 2000 Players Championship. He is a former four-time Ryder Cup player and captain. He's endorsed a putter called the Makefield Putter. And he has some pretty strong opinions on the money in the game today and on LIV Golf. So you're going to hear my conversation with the great Hal Sutton right after these messages.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori, and it is my pleasure to say hello to Hal Sutton, winner of 14 PGA Tour events, including the 1983 PGA Championship and the 1983 and 2000 Players Championships. And Hal is also a former four-time Ryder Cup player and captain of the Ryder Cup. Hal, welcome to Talking Golf. So nice to talk with you.
Thanks, Ann, and looking forward to visiting with you.
Hey, we are coming off some very exciting final rounds in pro golf. Rory McIlroy finally won a Masters title, capturing a career Grand Slam. And then Justin Thomas wins the RPC Heritage, his first title in almost 3 years. What do you make of this exciting golf the last 2 weeks?
Well, I think Rory winning the Masters is one of the most electrifying Masters we've seen in quite a while. And I think a lot of the world was pulling for him to complete the Grand Slam. I certainly was. And then Justin to win after 3 years. I know what it's like when you haven't won in several years and people expecting you to win. The weight keeps mounting on your shoulders. And I'm sure he was glad to put an end to that dry spell.
Yeah, I know you had a 9-year winless spell. I was reading it went from 1986 to 1995. How did you stay positive?
It's difficult, you know. Seems like there's a lot of negative thoughts all around you, you know, with people doubting. They, you know, that's what they tend to talk about because that's news, you know, and it's people want to hear those things, and you hear it too, even though they're not talking directly to you. You know, you're listening to what everybody else is saying. Then you begin to doubt yourself. And but anyway, you know, just keep persevering.
And that's exactly what Rory McIlroy did, finally winning that Masters title. Oh, gosh, after 11 years trying to capture a career Grand Slam, what were you thinking when you saw that roller coaster, just crazy round?
Well, I think that's what made it exciting, really, to be honest with you. He hit some crazy shots that, you know, nobody expected him to hit, you know, like when he basically almost, I would call it a little bit more than a chip in the water on 13, which, you know, was a, would have never expected him to do that. And then the pitching wedge on 18. I'd never seen that many three-shot swings in this last nine holes. So it was exciting for everybody watching.
Yeah, I mean, it was just this wild combination of brilliant shots with some pretty ugly, I guess it was because of nerves. I mean, what does it say about, you know, conquering your nerves and just having that kind of resilience?
Well, you never hear anybody say that they were nervous because they don't want to admit to that. But the truth is, everybody's nervous on things like that. And, you know, somehow you get through it without showing the nerves, but or most of the time you do. But all the great players were nervous in those times. You know, they you, you'd have to have ice water running in your veins not to be nervous in something like that.
You mean, gosh, talking about nerves, Padre Carrington in my book, Life on the Green, he told me, and I thought this was an incredible revelation. He told me he not only gets nervous when he tees it up, but he has fear as well. And it was, you know, his advice is to embrace that fear because it's normal. Did you have fear like that, or is that just unique to Padre?
Well, I don't know if I had fear, but I think the fear is of failure.
Right.
You want to succeed, you know, but you do have to embrace that. You have to realize that that is a possible outcome, but so is success a possible outcome. And, you know, you keep your mindset on the success part and you try to put the fear of failure in the back of your mind. So
it's all normal, very normal. So embrace those nerves, embrace that fear, that's for sure. Well, Justin Thomas wins his 16th PGA Tour title, and I was happy for him at the RBC Heritage. What do you think these recent wins for these guys mean heading into the PGA Championship? Now, I know Rory has won two PGA Championships. JT has also won two. So what are your, I mean, obviously the confidence is through the roof, you would think.
I'm sure it is, and I'm sure that it makes for a great showdown. And, you know, Scottie Scheffler has been up at the top but hadn't played his best golf, and I'm sure he's wanting to right that ship as well. So the PGA Championship in North Carolina, it ought to be a great event.
Have you played Quail Hollow?
I have not played Quail Hollow, so I'm not a good judge of it, other than I've heard many, many good things about it.
Well, I know there's the Green Mile, the closing three holes stretch, which is very challenging. And I know Rory's won there four times. So it will be interesting to see how this Masters title frees him up, right? Rory McIlroy, just what's next for him? I mean, he's going to come in with a lot of confidence and momentum. And how do you think he's going to do going forward?
Well, that's hard to say. You know, he's lifted a big monkey off of his back, and he could either play real free or he might be exhausted as well.
Right.
So you never really know. I wish him well. He's a great guy. Just recently I was at TPC and he was sitting a few tables over from me when he got up. He came over to the table and spoke to me for a little bit. You know, he didn't have to do that. And that's just the kind of guy Rory is. So, you know, he's a friend and I was happy for him.
What are your memories of winning the PGA Championship at, gosh, it was at Riviera in 1983?
Yeah. Well, my memories were that I got to beat my boyhood idol, Jack Nicklaus. So that's the biggest memory from that event. You know, he was in the clubhouse. I was one shot ahead, and I just had to get it to the clubhouse. So, you know, having Jack Nicklaus standing on the 18th green watching me come in, you know, that was – and I was able to end up parring 18 and beat him by one. So that was one of those memories that I hold – close to the heart.
Not bad. Beating the best, Jack Nicklaus. Wow, what a great memory, huh?
Yeah, it was. It was a, you know, a dream come true. You know, of course, it set the stage for a lot of people to have a lot of expectations that you know, I didn't realize what was going to be next. And, you know, all of a sudden I went from chasing my own dreams to having to live up to everybody else's expectations. And that can be frustrating, you know. It's not an easy task.
When you won in 83, Hal, your winner's check was $100,000, if I read this correctly. And yeah. Last year, the PGA champion earned $3.3 million. The total purse, by the way, was $18.5 million. What are your thoughts about the huge money the PGA Tour players are earning today?
Well, you know, I went on to win the money list that year with like $450,000 or something. And now the leading money winners earn whatever they earn, 25, 30, 40 million. I don't know what it's going to be this year, with Rory. But anyway, you know, I'm sure that the people that came before me looked at it that way. I'll tell you a quick story, Ann. Sure. I worked with Byron Nelson when I was first 2 or 3 years that I was on the tour. And I would always go over to Preston Trail, and he called me after I had been Rookie of the Year, and I made like $237,000. And he would watch me hit balls for about 30 or 40 minutes. Then we'd go in and have lunch. And so he called me after I had been Rookie of the Year, and he said, let's come over. And I did. And we had gone in to eat lunch, and I excused myself to the bathroom. I came back out, and big old alligator tears were running down his cheek. And I said, Mr. Nelson, what's wrong? And he said, nothing, Hal. He said, you know, he said, you just won $237,000. And he said, I feel like I had something to do with your golf game. And he said, you won more in this year than I won in my entire lifetime. I feel like I had something to do with the tour. I had something to do with the purses that are where they are now. And I had something to do with yours. He said, these are tears of joy.
Wow. That is intense. Whew. What a, yeah. I mean, he
so
was
that
just an incredible
puts it
guy.
Into, that puts it into perspective about money, you know?
Right. Right. It, absolutely. I mean, you did it for the love of the game, right? For the joy. And so did Byron. And do you think there's too much money now in the game? Is it kind of ruining the sport?
Well, since you asked the question, I used to think legacy meant something. I think money means more than anything else now. And I think, I think back in our day, I mean, I'll give you for instance, I was 25 years old when I led the money list, and my life wasn't set for the rest of my life. I had to get ready to go the next year because I didn't have enough money to make it for the rest of my life. Some of these guys now make so much money that they could quit tomorrow and they'd never miss a beat. And that changes the desire level for some, not all, but for some.
I asked Phil Mickelson this question and Rory McIlroy at the U.S. Open at Brookline a couple years ago. And Rory, I asked him, you know, what does legacy mean to you? And Rory had the best answer. He says, you cannot buy your reputation. You cannot buy your legacy.
Love that. I would have expected him to answer it that way.
Yeah. And it was a long-winded answer, but, you know, it was, and I asked Phil the same question the day before, and he looked at me like he was going to choke me.
Well, he didn't want to have to answer that.
I know. Well, I also followed it up with, and do you think your legacy has changed since you've joined Liv? And of course, that got on full swing on Netflix, and you could see him glaring at me. You know, he said one line, and then he actually had a decent answer that went on and on, but it, you know, they cut it off. But anyway, speaking of Liv, obviously the money in the PGA Tour, I believe, is a direct result from Liv Golf. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it had to be. You know, they had to do something. I never have figured this whole thing out. I mean, what is the end result for Liv? I mean, these guys certainly made a lot of money. I could see why some of them did it. You know, Lee Westwood, the guy, I could actually see why Phil Mickelson did it. He was at the end of his career. And, you know, that was a lot of money. But people like John Rahm, I couldn't figure out why he did it. You know, he obviously, legacy didn't mean anything to John. I mean, the money meant something to him. And, you know, what is the end game for the Liv? I mean, as far as Saudi is concerned with, I mean, I've tried to watch Liv on TV. I understand the game at a deep level. I cannot understand why they're doing what they're doing. A 54-hole golf tournament, let me just tell you, sleeping on the lead for one more round is a whole lot tougher than just doing it for three rounds or two rounds. And how can a winner not finish on the same holes as the other guy? I mean, you know, you might be in theirs, you might be finishing on the easiest par five on the whole golf course, and the other guy might be finishing on the hardest par four on the golf course. That's not a correct finish. And I don't know. I could go on and on, but I won't.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir. I agree with everything you said. Well, Having said that, would you like to see the top players on both tours playing together more often?
Well, I would like to see the best players playing against each other more often. I would. And I think all the golf fans around the world would like to see that. I don't know how. I think that's going to be a slow process to get it back. And I also think that some of the guys that have departed might not ever be in that environment again.
And how did the guys who did not depart feel? How would they feel if, you know, they let the other guys back in? So there's too many factors here. And, you know, that's why, in the, you know, the negotiations to me sound like they're not going anywhere for sure. But that is a topic for another time. Let me ask you about Makefield putter. This is the first time you're endorsing a putter, Hal Sutton?
It is the first time. I, you know, they had talked to me for a year or two, and I just wasn't ready, I don't guess. And then I finally decided, well, look, let me come up there and go through y'all's factory and see why y'all do what you do and why you say what you say. And it was a great experience. You know, their technology is pretty sound. They're trying to get the ball with less skid effect, get it on the ground sooner, and all the weight is through the equator of the ball, and then you're able to move the weights around as you feel like it suits your stroke. And you know, I didn't understand all that as they explained it to me, but once I went through the factory and went through the fitting, I was really amazed, to be honest with you. So you know, I was always either I had Ping Answer or Scotty Cameron Newport News most of my life. That's what I won most of my golf tournaments with. And all the new putters, the new age, the data that we're able to compile now was after me. So I guess I would say I was skeptical to begin with. Mm-hmm. But after going through it, I just said, this is a must. I'm happy to do this. I'm happy to support this because I think what y'all have done is fantastic. And I think it'll help a lot of golfers.
I love what Hal Sutton has to say. I mean, we only had 16 minutes for that segment, but we'll have to get him back on Talking Golf. He's not the only person I spoke to recently who told me that they think the money in the game may take away incentive. And obviously he says that legacy is more important than money. All right, well, the first major championship on the women's calendar, the Chevron Championship final round, starts shortly. And golf commentator extraordinaire Grant Boone, he'll join us when we come back. We'll get his insight on the world of the LPGA and this major championship. We'll be right back.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And my next guest has done so much to support and promote women's golf. Grant Boone is an exceptional broadcaster, a play-by-play host of the LPGA Tour and the Golf Channel, a sports broadcaster for NBC, CBS, ESPN. Grant, welcome to Talking Golf.
Good morning, Annie. I love talking golf, and especially with someone like you. How are you doing? The golf game is clearly in mid-season form, from what I hear.
Well, I was just part of a winning team, and two of the women on our team were just, they just play lights out. It's such a
so
joy to watch.
As always.
These...
Modest as always. You
oh,
carried
my
the team.
God.
My sources tell me you carried the team.
That is not the case, okay. I can assure you. But, hey, the last time I saw you, we were walking with none other than Caitlin Clark when she was playing in the Pro-Am of the Annika, the LPGA tournament in Florida. How much fun was that?
Well, I'll put it this way. I've been working at Golf Channel for 25 years.
Wow.
That's the first time we've ever gone live from a Pro-Am. So what does that tell you about the Caitlin Clark effect? You know, and then to have Annika there. And then she, of course, she was playing with Nelly for 9 holes, so who ended up winning the tournament. So it was Caitlin and Nelly, and it was this nexus that was memorable. And it's the kind of thing that those of us who really love the LPGA Tour loved because, and I've broadcast women's basketball for 30 years and love every bit of it. And you just want to keep seeing all sports, men's and women's, you know, continue to grow. And mainly what you want, Anne, is you want people to see it. And then if they don't like it, great. It's because none of us are going to love everything. But at least see it first, at least be exposed to it. And my dear friend and longtime colleague, Judy Rankin, always says, if you get just a little bit of the LPGA, if you get a little bit of exposure to it, if you play in a pro-am as you have, if you walk like you did with Caitlin Clark in a pro-am with Nelly Korda, if you get a little taste of the LPGA, you will be hooked. Not every single one will be, but if you're a golf fan, you'll be amazed by what they do, and I have been for 25 years.
Absolutely. I mean, all those basketball fans who showed up, I've never seen so many people at a pro-am. Now, how does the LPGA ride that momentum? You know, I mean, can they benefit from the Caitlin factor?
I think the rising, you know, the boats lift, you know, lifts all boats, the rising tide lifts all boats. You know, if you get, I sound like George W. Bush all of a sudden, I am in Texas, but fool me once, as he said, or whatever. But, you know, if you get people paying attention to how good someone is, Caitlin Clark is a good basketball player, you know, not a good women's basketball player. She's just a good basketball player. Nelly Korda is a phenomenal golfer. You know, and people always, I hear people say, you know, well, watch the LPGA. It's way more like how a guy would play, an amateur guy. And I'm like, what amateur guys are you looking at?
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
An amateur guy. I can't play anything like they play.
They are so talented.
We're blown away when we see Rory, aren't we, Ann? When we see him hit a 350-yard drive. The superpower that you and I get to witness on the LPGA and fans of the LPGA, their superpower, generally speaking, is hitting the ball straight. And anyone who's ever tried to hit a golf ball knows that that does take a superhuman power to hit the ball straight. The ball doesn't want to go straight, at least mine
especially
don't.
Especially at that distance that these women hit.
Unbelievable. They hit it so much farther than people think. So, yeah, you get Caitlin going great in her sport. You get Nelly catching eyeballs, you know, in LPGA. You see what's happening in gymnastics and softball and other women's sports, and I think it does create a little bit of a buzz, and we need every bit of it. Again, you just want people to see it. As long as they've seen it, then you say we've had a fair shot. And like, for example, this afternoon, it's going to be on NBC. So, the ratings are always better when the LPGA is on network, not just Golf Channel. And so that'll be today, and I hope we have a great finish.
Well, it's the first major for the women, the Chevron Championship. I know, I remember this major when it was the Nabisco Dinosaur. The championship was in the desert and Palm Springs, Mission Hills. And, you know, I would play in the Pro-Am a few times and interviewed celebrities like Joe Pesci and Alice Cooper. Mm-hmm. And I miss those days, Grant, but it's taken off in the Woodlands in Texas.
Yeah, it's certainly trying. It's going to be, you couldn't move the Masters to a different location and then just suddenly say, well, hey, this is great, and have everyone be early adopters of it. And so 51 years, you know, of the Dinosaur, you know, at Mission Hills in the desert, it was the LPGA's Masters. It was the place they went back to every year. We remember that 18th hole. We remember all the great shots, Kari Webb holding out to force a playoff and then winning it. And so you have those great memories, and now they've moved it to a different place. The club at Carlton Woods has proven to be a very good test. You know, you got 9-under par leading going into the final round, and I don't think people want to see a birdie fest at a major. You don't want to see people shooting 20-under. So good. It's been a really good hard test, and you've got two elite players. You've got the last two rookies of the year. You've got two players who have spent a ton of time in the top 15 in the world. They're not elite in terms of wins, but you've got Lilia Vu, who won it 2 years ago. You got Nelly, who won it last year. They are both elite. They both won a couple of majors. And And so you've got a little history that's building, but I think it's going to take time. And what you need is you need to continue to have great Sundays, great finishes on NBC. And hopefully we have that again today.
And you have Lexi Thompson right in the mix.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, she's only three shots back. I think this semi-retirement state is working for her, don't you?
Let's all semi-retire. What do you think? And see how that goes. Lexi, you know, right now you got Haedon Yu, who's from Korea, and young, brilliant young players, the best ball striker on the LPGA Tour. Mao Saigo of Japan, they're tied. So you got the last two rookies of the year. They're right there. Then you have Lindy Duncan, who's this veteran, this journey woman. She's 34 years old. She's played 11 years, 12 years out there. She's never won. She's really never been in contention in a big event like this before. So she's going to play in the final group. Then Sarah Schmelzel is this, you know, talented American who's been out there 7 years. She's threatened to win a couple of times, played on the Solheim Cup team last year. She's got a chance to break through in a huge way. And then, my gosh, the face of the LPGA Tour, really more than anyone. Lydia Ko would be up there as well, but you're talking for the last 15, almost 20 years. Remember when she was 12 and she made the U.S. Open, Lexi Thompson back in 2007. Now she's, you know, she's 30 years old now. She said last year, I'm stepping away full time. Never said she was retiring. She just said, I just living life in the fishbowl. My colleague Morgan Pressel knows what that's like. You're a preteen and you're already being, you know, cheered on to try to win big events. And it's just, it is a grind. People don't know what it's like. Most of us will never know what that's like. And so Lexi, I think it just took a little pressure off of her to say, I'm done on a full-time basis. I'm still going to pick and choose. And she finished 50th on the points list last year. So, you know, out of 180 players. So she had a very good year. And after she announced that semi-retirement, she almost, you know, she put herself in contention at a major at Sahali at the women's PGA. She almost won up in Grand Rapids, lost a playoff after that announcement. So there's no reason to think that Lexi couldn't do it. She's had so many close calls. So this isn't quite Willis Reed at the Garden coming out of the locker room and coming back. Not quite that.
Great but analogy, Lexi, though. I love it.
It is the fan. But if Lexi comes back and wins today, we're going to be talking about this forever, as long as they talk about women's golf, a player who rose above. If you talk about anything with Lexi, it's her resilience. She has been flattened by the game, the number of close calls, missed putts, late shots, you know, chances to win major championships, went to the, you know, at Olympic Club, a great chance to win at Congressional in 2022, had the lead late. So many times with a chance to win. She has the one major. It was at this event out at the desert in Palm Springs in 2014. And now 11 years later, 6 years, we're talking that this is her 98th start since she last won on the LPGA Tour. If she wins again, this is going to be an all-time day.
Wow. It's just exciting that she's up there, right? And of course, Nelly Korda then became the face of American golf. And she hasn't really, you know, well, obviously, how do you repeat last year? Her, you know, she had such an incredible five straight wins, including the Chevron Championship. Nelly's in there, but she shot even par. She's one under for the championship.
Shot one under yesterday. Yeah. She's even for the tournament and nine back. That would, you know, 10 back is the all-time LPGA record for a Sunday rally, and seven is the largest comeback in a major to win. So history says that Nelly's not going to win it. She did yesterday at one point get within four of the lead, and seeing as how she started the day, eight off the lead, and late Friday she was 14 shots off the lead. So she got it within four yesterday, then had two double bogeys in a row. And that really ended her legitimate chances to win. You never say never with Nelly. I mean, I think they're going to set the course up a little easier today, and she's going to go out early. It's not likely. But then again, neither was winning seven tournaments in a row. So I've quit putting anything past Nelly. But she would need to do something historic like she did last year. But in one day, it would be the biggest Sunday rally in the history of 75-year history of women's of major championship golf.
Before I let you go, Grant, and I always want more time with you, but how's Uncle Pat? Is he still playing golf?
Uncle Pat, I saw him last week when we were out in L.A. for the for the JM Eagle LA Championship. I went with him. You'll love this, Annie. I went with, he's 91 in June. And of course, he hit it big there in New York on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour, then on the Ed Sullivan Show. He finished his degree at Columbia up there while he was starring on the Ed Sullivan Show. Then he hit it big in Hollywood and moved out to Beverly Hills. He still does a weekly radio show on Sirius XM, 50s on 5. So it's a Sunday afternoon show. I went with him to record the episode, and he had on, of all people, Ryan Cassidy, the son of Shirley Jones, one of his longtime co-stars. Sure. So he's, I'm telling you, he still got it. And we're driving around Hollywood, and I'm just thinking, this is surreal. Like, it pinched me. But Uncle Pat, he's a legend. He's my dad's brother, and he's still going strong.
Love him.
Not
love
as strong
you.
As
Thank you,
you. But he's still going strong.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much, Grant. I just love talking to you. What fun. Really, always
great
a pleasure.
Fun. So fun. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you so much, Grant Boone. Before that, Hal Sutton. My thanks to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Mark Malusis is up next. Enjoy this Sunday. Have a great week, and I so look forward to visiting with you again next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.